Welcome to TLDR AusPol, the podcast for the engaged-ish people of the world.
Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we record this podcast, both the Gadigal and the Wurundjeri people. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. We acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded and that this land and the lands on which you're listening from always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of TLDR AusPol.
10.
Hello, Ree.
Hi, 10. Annabelle.
I feel 10. Like there's a musical theatre reference here that I'm going to get hauled over the coals for by my friends. Ah, can't think of one.
Oh.
10 long years. There we go.
Great.
That's a bit of Love Never Dies for you.
You really have being the member that's brought the musical theatre to TLDR. I have done none of that.
Go back and listen through the references that I have provided.
Yes.
And catalogue them.
Catalogue them, archive them, tag them for future listening. How are
I'd
you
like
doing?
To, Well, look, in here in the episode notes, it says, good mate, but it says it in blue, so I don't think I'm allowed to say that. How are you doing?
Good mate. Yeah. That's probably the first time we've followed the show notes so strictly.
It's minute like two.
Yeah, that's right. It's two solid minutes of banter, and we're finally about to follow the script. It is episode 10. It's really exciting to get to episode 10. I don't know when we started this thing, whether I thought we'd even make it to episode 10.
Here we are, double digits.
Double digits. We're growing up. we're a week late, so sincerest apologies to our dedicated fans who missed us last week. Full disclosure, we're bloody exhausted. We're both living through a lockdown. Well, you're about to come out of lockdown. Congratulations.
Sure am. Thank you. I'll back to the gym tomorrow.
Back to the gym for you. Are you still doing bar?
No barre. Like full weights gym thing. Wow. This is what happens when you've got a pro wrestling boyfriend.
Yeah, show it boyfriend. Shows you. BJ, really, really coming up with the goods there.
Showed me how to use all those machines.
Amazing. Well, you can go back to the gym tomorrow. Yeah. I won't be going back to the gym for a while. I'm still hobbling on one leg, leg
that
over
here.
That
was mean of me, wasn't it?
That's okay. I mean, I see people walk every day and I don't get upset with them. But yeah, we're just a bit tired. We are, we're normal people who get run down when you're living through a pandemic. So we are a week late. But we thought that it would be good to wrap up our budget series. The budget was a really long time ago. But we thought that it would be good to just round out the series. What are some of the other topics we've covered in the budget series, Abby?
You've asked me a question that isn't in front of me. Sorry. In my show notes. I'll have to use my brain, my memory.
Use your brain. I can give you one. We did aged care.
Yeah. And we did mental health.
Yeah, we did. We did do that. I got on a soapbox first time all season. And we did the intro to the budget, talked a little bit about what we'd both kind of taken from this year's budget. And so it is only polite that we finish the budget series with a touch on the budget reply.
Agree.
Abby, what's the budget reply?
So 2 days after the federal government handed down that federal budget, ALBO gave the opposition leader's traditional reply. I use the phrase traditional reply because I found it in a Herald Sun article and I liked it.
Excellent.
Because it sounded like I knew what I was talking about.
You do know what you're talking about. Yes, that is correct. After the federal budget is handed down a couple of days later, the opposition leader does traditionally reply.
Herald Sun made it so.
I thought it was interesting. I've never really paid much attention to the reply before this year. Well, actually, before you said you wanted to do an episode on it to round out the budget series, I was like, oh, yeah, it sounds like something that's probably polite to do. But I thought it was kind of interesting in thinking through, you know, one of the things we like to do on TLDR is explain the mechanics of how something works or how a policy works or what it does. You know, when I was thinking about, well, like, what are the mechanics of the reply? It kind of reminded me of episode 3, where we talked about what is policy and tried to define, you know, kind of our show definition of what would be covered under the banner of TLDR AusPol. Mm. You know, and we talked about how the policy is really different if you're, you know, the leader of the sitting government, or you're the leader of the opposition, or, you know, you are the sitting government, or you are the opposition. Mm. And that for the opposition, it's really an opportunity to kind of spruik what you would do. You know, it's your time to get on the campaign trail and say that if we had the reins at this particular point in time, this is how we would have done it. Sometimes that can be really aggressive, you know, being like, this sucks and we hate this and we would do this. You know, and sometimes it's just very matter of fact. I found this year's budget reply pretty matter of fact.
Yeah, totally.
There was no hardcore slagging, which is good, because we're probably going to come into an election soon and we're going to get enough slagging anyway. So let's leave that for the election campaign. But yeah, the budget reply is the chance for the opposition to spruik how they would have approached the government, the budget, if they were in sitting government. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about in this budget series how the budget is a little bit of political theatre. You know, it's really an opportunity for a government to get up and outline what's important to them, where they're going to spend money. It's an opportunity for us to see whether they've been listening to us and what we're saying as citizens is important. And the budget reply is no different. You know, you said it, I think you said it in the aged care episode, maybe, that that one of your realizations was that governments were never held accountable to the budgets that they put out. The opposition's never going to get held to account to a budget that they would have done if they had have been in power in the particular year that they're applying to the budget. So the budget reply is no different. You know, it's just another active political theatre. But look, let's get down to brass tacks. Tell me, what did Albo say?
I will tell you what Albo said. So, and I looked on his website. I got it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Amazing.
So according to his website, a Labor government will firstly establish a Housing Australia Future Fund and build homes for our most vulnerable Australians. And they say creating more than 20,000 jobs each year over 5 years. They'll also establish new energy apprenticeships in renewable industries, giving Australians a foot in the door in industries that will power tomorrow's economy. They will criminalize wage theft in Australia. And the reason I get tongue-tied with that, because wage theft has actually just been criminalized in Victoria.
So yeah, interesting.
Going back and reading this, like, after obviously we, as you said, we sort of popped off for a week and came back to this. And in the week that we had a bit of R&R, Victoria went ahead and criminalized wage theft.
Amazing. I'm so glad reading Victoria that, I was like, that. Well,
they obviously read my show notes. So number 4 is to legislate an obligation on employers to keep their employees safe from discrimination and harassment in the workplace. And number 5, create a mentoring program for 2,000 young innovators to start a business straight out of uni, connected to experts in their field, backed by universities and supported by the Labor government.
Great. Sounds like some pretty good things.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would say yes, of course.
Yeah, you're allowed.
Wow, inspired.
Wow, amazing! What an incredible budget. I think it's worth noting here that, like, one of the comments, it was probably me, made in the first episode about the budget, was just about how the federal government did look a little bit different this year. You know, like, there was a lot of social spend. In a Liberal government, which isn't necessarily always super characteristic. And I think that the reply did look a little bit different as well. You know, there wasn't this like huge disparity in the areas that that both of the governments, both the parties would be saying they'd be spending money in. Yeah. But I think there's some really interesting difference in tactics, and there's some really interesting difference in like programs and initiatives. Which is cool. So I think it's kind of cool. I'm really glad that we chose to, you know, deep dive into the budget in a year where the budget looked a bit different from normal, and that a lot of the commentary is saying so. because yeah, I think it's cool to, like, I'm looking forward to next year's budget now, which honestly never thought I'd hear myself saying that, but I'm looking forward to, like, having the knowledge that I do after looking at this year's budget and, like, actually paying attention to it and seeing what happens.
Let's have a budget watch party in person next year, Rhiannon.
Yes. I would love that. Yeah.
It will happen.
Yeah, it totally will. Let's do it. Do you want to hear one of the things that I really liked about Albo's reply?
Please.
Yeah, cool. Because I'm ready to give it to you. Point number one for me, you know, Ree's fun number one for today is entitled, in caps, "Yay, Young Innovators." Woo. Woo, exactly. I work in tech, so I was excited that innovation and an initiative to encourage young people to innovate was tabled by the Labor Party. Because obviously, being entrenched in the world that I am, I get really excited by things being done in different ways and things being done in new ways. And I think we really need to encourage our young people to be doing that from the get-go. You know, like, we have an incredible opportunity in Australia to follow our dreams. How aspirational does that sound? But we have a really good environment, and a really great, like, startup ecosystem for young people to get engaged with if they want it. And so the incentive was that you could add a certain amount of cash to your hex debt to get your startup going, which I'm a bit on the fence about the tactics, but I'm more overly excited about the fact that the, you know, scheme was tabled at all. It was quite specific. So the incentive was that you could add more cash to your hex debt to get your startup going if you were engaged with, like, a university accelerator program or a program via a university that would help you get your startup going, which, you know, I've worked the last couple of years at UTS and really loved the experience of being involved in a bunch of new things there. But I'm just not entirely sure that that's the only way to get young people accelerated into startups and into really innovative careers and building really interesting things. So, like I said, not super chuffed on the execution, but just loved, like, I remember on the day that one of the articles came out, like the announcement, Albo made the announcement about the Young Innovators Fund or whatever it's called. I should check these things before I go on record.
Amanda will fix it up for you in post.
She will. She'll write me a show note. Yeah. Thanks, Amanda. We love you. But I remember texting our show boyfriend, Andy, being like, "Lol, Albo's talking about jobs and growth." So I was just really excited to see the importance of innovation and also the importance of fostering innovation at a young age kind of brought out in the budget. And I just thought it was a fun addition. You know, kind of for me, it was the Coke in the Bubblers announcement. You know, like, you know, when you're in primary school and there's the kid going for school captain and they say, "I'm going to get analogy. Coke in the Bubblers." That was the moment I had with Albo. He comes out talking about innovation and I was like, "Oh, this is amazing." So yeah, that was my number one fun fact for the budget reply.
Very good. I've got a couple.
Yeah, I bet.
If you'll indulge me.
Of course I will indulge you. Isn't this whole thing indulgent? The LBRL's poll is an activity indulging each other's thoughts.
Mate, I want to tell you what I've called my first thought.
Please.
I've called it, because I'm really proud of it, I've called it "What the Half."
What the half?
What the half? It needs a theme. Do do do.
I like how you emphasize the H too. What the half?
The half. So one of the centerpieces, the reason that why it's called this is because one of the centerpieces of Albo's budget reply speech was that this $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, which I mentioned before. Yeah. And I'm going to lovingly refer to it as the HAF.
Excellent.
HAF. Obviously my microphone is HAF. Doesn't sound like that in my headphones, but I'm just going to go with it.
Roll with it.
It's a bit of a different. Oh, did I break up then?
Yeah, you did for a sec.
Right, I'm just going to go straight back to.
We don't edit this thing, so just keep going.
So it's a bit of a different way of thinking than the federal government's $1.24.7 million over 2 years. So What the half?
Sorry.
I'm really proud of it.
I love how much you're cracking yourself up over this one.
So it's good. If I break up, it's probably just me laughing at myself.
Easy.
All you've missed. So just to explain a bit further, I've gone for an example which is similar, but I know a bit more about, which is the $20 billion Medical Research Future Fund, or the MRFF for those playing at home. MRF. So the MRF was announced by Joe Hockey in the 2014 budget and established in 2015. So the MRF, I work with the MRFF at work, so I'm never going to get this out of my head now. The MRF. The MRF used the reallocation of the savings in health spending that were also announced in that 2014 budget, as well as uncommitted money from the Health and Hospitals Fund to fund it. So the MRFF, I have to just go back to MRFF. The MRFF reached its $20 billion target in 2020. So it now has annual investment returns of around $650 million. And it's with these investment returns that they fund fund medical research.
I have my hand up for those who can't see, because it's all of you, because this is a podcast. So hold on. Can I just try and confirm the mechanics of this? So they saved money from other parts of the budget. So they took a little bit from some other health spending.
From the Health and Hospitals Fund. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they invested that into medical research.
So they did.
Was it medical research that was commercialized, or like how did they make money? Do you understand the question I'm asking? Sorry, this is off script. I haven't prepared
for this. So basically the health and what they did was they reallocated some spending and over the from 2014 or 2015 to now that pot of money has grown.
Okay, because they've invested in research that has created a return. Yeah,
correct.
And then now it continues to get a return.
So it's now reached that $20 billion. Okay. So now they reinvest that $20 billion each year and then they just spend the return on the investment.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, on medical research, which is through grant funding essentially.
Yeah, cool.
Roger Dodger. And the half operates a lot like that, but instead of slowly building the target up over the 6 years from 2014 to 2020, Albo has just said that the fund will be seeded with $10 billion. So they'll just start with that funding in the bank. And then they'll begin, well, not in the bank.
It's a lot of seed funding.
It's not in ING or anything like that.
Hey, I haven't read The Barefoot Investor. It's not in the...
you called me out immediately.
I saw you.
No, whenever you see someone with that orange card come out, you're like, ooh,
Barefoot Investor. I see you.
So what they'll do is what you essentially have is a stable pot of money and then an ongoing funding stream from investment returns for medical research. So basically the plan is to transfer those investment returns each year from the HAF to the National Housing and Finance Corporation, the NHFIC. So that's another one for your bingo card. And the idea is to use it to pay for social and affordable housing projects. So Albo has promised 20,000 social houses in the first 5 years, with 4,000 of those reserved for women and children fleeing domestic violence and for older women on low incomes at risk of homelessness. And then another 10,000 affordable properties will be built and set aside for low and middle income frontline workers, such as, you know, police officers, teachers, nurses, cleaners, those sort of things, who can't afford, for example, to live in like Sydney or suburbs close to where they work.
Yeah.
So then after the first 5 years of operation, those returns from the fund will be used in perpetuity to service those houses.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's kind of the way that this, sets up. And the way that I was able to understand it was through the MRFF, which has been really fabulous for, you know, working in a medical research space. That's been really fabulous. So, you know, unsurprisingly, I like it. you know, and because, I mean, look, the housing crisis is a long-term game and this is a long-term solution in my mind. But what's not detailed here for me is the long-term vision behind the HAF. So, like, I couldn't find any answers to things like how will those 20,000 social houses and 10,000 affordable houses be built? Where will they be built? Who will build them? Who will operate them? All those sort of questions, which I really think is important, but, you know, I do have faith in the Labor government.
this is good.
You know, I need to. But it is also similar to the New South Wales State Government's Social and Affordable Housing Fund, the SHSF, the SAF. That's the last acronym, like I'm pretty much done. But since its establishment, it was established in 2016, and since then it's used returns from its $1 billion fund to build over 3,400 social and affordable homes. So it's been really successful. So rolling out on a federal level I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I really like the premise of it. I like the premise of like the MRFF or the MRF, you know, if you will. And I like the premise of the half, you know, of like
the MRF, yeah,
like trying to make our money work better for us, you know. And it actually sounds, it sounds like a clever way of investing. To be able to then spend returns. And I do wonder, like, what the opposition to it would be, like, what the opposition to that kind of approach is. I don't really have one.
It's a lot of money to put aside, like, next year kind of thing. Yeah. You know, in a budget where everything, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah, which is where the MRFF start is more conservative, you know, kind of going like, oh, we'll grab a little bit from here and there.
Exactly.
And so-and-so won't notice if their pocket money is only $8 not 10 this week. To start it, but it's pretty bold to $10 billion of seed funding. I know a lot of startups that would just like die to get that kind of cash.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, as you say, like the difference in a Liberal government proposing a future fund and a Labor government proposing a future fund, it's like, nah, we'll find all the money at once.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah. So that was my first, that was what the half.
Yeah.
My second one, and this maybe prefaces how it's going to go. It's called Okay Childcare.
With two full stops. Okay, full stop.
Okay.
Childcare, full stop.
Yeah.
So it's stern.
Yeah, yeah. Get serious. So Albo's plan to remove the childcare subsidy cap is essentially, which he talked about in this year's budget reply, it's essentially the same deal as last year's budget reply. He's pretty much just reiterated what he said last year. So under the plan, the childcare subsidy cap would be completely scrapped and subsidy rates would be boosted. So they're offered to families earning up to $530K a year.
Mm.
And this has been pretty controversial. It was honestly surprising to me. Once I started to kind of read into it, I realized, you know, there's a senator called Senator Simon Birmingham who said, you know, if Albo wants to go out there and say that's a good use of taxpayer money to provide childcare subsidy to the highest income earning Australians, to families who can already choose to re-enter the workforce, for whom the cost of childcare is not an impediment in making their decisions, like he can go his hardest. And I get that kind of idea of all of these like rich families like accessing childcare and that sort of thing. So it was surprising on the surface. Once I started to read the comments, I was like, okay, I get where like the controversy is a bit. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, my thought process of that is like, no one questions the universal availability of state schools. Like, you know, if wealthy parents want to send their child to a state school free of charge, they're perfectly entitled to do so.
Mm.
You know, so why is childcare being treated like welfare in this instance? So, you know, like, why do we apply means tests to a three-year-old's parents where a five-year-old's parents don't get any means testing?
Mm.
You know, Aussies aren't Medicare's not means tested, though the NDIS isn't means tested. So why is childcare means tested?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I'm sort of in two minds about this, and it's a bit hard for me because I've got a three-year-old in childcare at the moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've talked a little bit about my own sort of personal re-entry into the world, like, you know, my sort of, my backstory, but you know, in 2019, 2 years after my husband died while I was pregnant, I received a Centrelink bill for over $3,500 for 6 months of childcare for my daughter Primrose because Josh's life insurance payout had pushed me above the current childcare subsidy cap.
Mm.
So I had to find that money again. You know, and Albo does say, you know, there's a disincentive for women to work more than 3 days a week currently, because that's where the point where the cost of childcare becomes prohibitive. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's been my experience of juggling work and having Primrose and daycare and being a single mom. But, you know, as that single mom, I had to build a career that could single-handedly provide the life and education that my daughter deserves so she's not disadvantaged by her father's death.
Mm.
And, you know, and I have done that. I'm really proud of that. But that took more than 3 days a week. You know, I had to go back. I had to go back 4.5 months after she, when she was 4.5 months old. I have had to build that career over time. That takes time. Yeah. You know, it takes more than 3 days week. So, you know, we can talk all about like the economic impact of encouraging women back into the workplace in, you know, a future episode if we like. And yeah. I'll try and keep my emotions out of it and really like look at the facts. Like, and our lovely show boss, our lovely show boss Amanda, who we've referenced, you know, we love you, Amanda.
We love you.
You know, she highlighted the Thrive by Five movement from Mindaroo. And I want to go back and look into that more, and maybe that's some homework for us for this future episode, which I've now inadvertently plugged twice.
you know, pushing her agenda here. No wonder you're in politics.
You know, but you know, I essentially, and again, unsurprisingly, I agree with Albo's plan. You know, childcare is not welfare, and I just think we remove this cap.
I find this one so I see both sides on this one, which I really struggle with, because what I can also see is removing the cap, and then in a couple of years' time, the Labor Party being upset with how many wealthy families are getting taxpayer money. Like I can see that campaign also coming out, and so I'm like, how do you win here? You know, because like I understand all of the logic of it, but then I'm also like, would you not get upset? Like, you can't tell me there wouldn't be a campaign from the Labor Party saying how much of our taxpayer money is now going to families that don't need it. We have bigger needs elsewhere.
I just think the thought process around childcare being something that needs to be means tested is something that I just fundamentally disagree with.
And like, I should say as well, the struggle I have with this is like, as someone who one day wants to be having these conversations as well, you know, like thinking about my future career.
I'm setting this up for you, Ray.
No. And so I'm like, oh, of course I want this, because I love work. I love my work. I want to be able to, you know, have access to childcare so that I can keep nurturing this career that I'm working really hard on. But I'm like, I just kind of also get over the logic of like, oh, it like, I feel like most things with politics, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know, because with this one, I can see us removing the cap, you know, particularly if we get a Labor government in as our next government, that kind of thing would be super quick on the election promises to be fulfilled, I reckon. And then I can see doing a total flip, you know, in a couple of years and being like, well, now we have heaps of Australians that don't need that government money getting it. But I also want it because I'm like, I want to be able to put my kids in childcare and still be, you know, contributing, functioning member of society. So, yeah, I don't know where I sit on it.
Yeah, and it talks to so much more, which is why I think we can just do a deep dive at some point.
Yeah.
Because it talks to women taking time off and not, you know, contributing to their super for long periods of time.
Which
and,
is a massive challenge.
Then divorce happens, and then they're, you know, like it talks to so many different elements.
Yeah.
And my current, you know, show boyfriend BJ and me and Primrose have a beautiful life, and I'm the one with the 9 to 5, you know, I can't get out of this to go pick up Primrose from daycare type workplace. Well, I mean, it's beautiful and flexible and all of that, but you know, I'm the career person and showboy from BJ, who's a pro wrestler and the stunt man and entertainer and everything, is the one that's sort of probably the primary carer of Prim.
Yeah.
So we have a very interesting dynamic now, which is separate to the norm. So it'd be interesting to kind of pull all of those elements out of it and see how that kind of looks.
I would love to understand it more so I can decide where I sit, which is the whole point of TLDR.
and this is something obviously I'm quite passionate about. I've done the single mum thing, and I've done the, you know, unconventional family thing, and in both elements childcare was central. So that's just how I feel.
Thank you for that soapbox moment. You've really inspired me to think more about where I stand.
I felt myself on a roll then.
Yeah, you were in flow. Anyone who's studied comms, Chick Sent Me High's flow, she was there.
I felt you going to say something and I just kept going, so I apologize for that.
No, totally fine. I forget what it was. I was totally with you.
Look, I'm aware that you had 1 point. So do you got some more thoughts?
Do you got some more thoughts? I do have some more thoughts, yeah. I think, and we strategically planned that I gave my second point at the end of Abby's too, because there's something kind of philosophical about it. So, you know, sprung, you've looked under the hood.
It made it sound so natural too.
Yeah, so the segue was just chef's kiss. My second point for the budget, when we were chatting about this in our pre-show amble, was actually like quite philosophical, which is, you know, on par. It's on brand for me. But, you know, I had this moment when I was thinking back on, you know, the budget and the reply, and I was stroking my beard about all of the things and stroking my beard, looking wistfully out into the sunset. I just had this realization that, like, you know, that I joked earlier about how I had texted show boyfriend Andy the link to the Young Innovators Fund with a joke saying, like, Albert's talking about jobs and growth. And I had this like slow mind blow moment at that, you know, when I was thinking back to that moment where I was like, wow, of course the Labor Party care about jobs and growth. They have to, because Australians need jobs and we want Australia to grow. And I think the little like path that I wandered down in my mind was like this budget and really taking a good hard look at the budget, engaging with it this year, actually really showed me that like both sides of government, you know, both sides of the political spectrum, like they have to care about the same things because they're all things that are important to Australia. And maybe I sound like an idiot saying these things out loud, but I just, this budget really taught me that like they're the biggest difference in the way that the parties approached the budget was about execution, not necessarily about content. So there wasn't a whole lot of discrepancy around the areas that needed funding. You know, we agreed on a lot of the big stuff, like the aged care stuff had to happen as a result of the Royal Commission. They're both talking about addressing the housing crisis. They're both talking about, you know, things like childcare and our health system, like all of these key things are getting talked about, but what's really different is the tactics, and the way that the tactics are developed is about the philosophy and the ideology that goes behind that, you know. And and so I think it was really interesting to engage with the budget this year in a budget that's been talked about as being quite different on a couple of fronts, because I think what it kind of did was leveled the playing field a little bit, you know, and kind of really showed that like the important things always have to matter, you know, like at the end of the day, government's responsibility is to look after its people, and the way that it goes about that will differ depending on what that party believes, and that party has been voted in by the Australian people. And so I was kind of like, as I was thinking back, I was like, I'm almost excited for next year's budget, and I never thought I'd hear myself say that, because if this was the leveling of the playing field, and I don't know, some political commentator probably like vehemently disagrees with me on that, but you know, it's what it did for me, and my truth is my truth. I'm really fascinated by what happens next year, you know, and looking at next year's budget going, right, cool, I know a little bit more about how the budget works now. I've seen that when they have to, the Liberal Party can roll out things that do look a little bit more social by nature, and you know, I've learned that the Labor Party will talk about jobs and growth and innovation, and that matters to them as well, you know. But really, actually, what I want to learn more of moving forward is more about the execution of things, and how have the different party ideologies led them to develop different approaches to these things, which is actually just like a really big philosophical reflection on why the heck we started this thing in the first place, right?
I tell you what, like I dated a Texan Republican for a while there.
I love this story.
And horrifically, we agreed on, no, we didn't agree. Like we fundamentally disagreed on everything, which is probably one of the reasons why the relationship didn't work. But when we like really knuckled down to like the nub of the issue, we agreed like, right on the actual issue. It was the approach to the issue that was the fundamental difference.
Yeah.
And that is one of the reasons when you pitch this podcast to me, like, not that the, you know, there's any Republican flavoring in here in this conversation. But I love the idea of, if I can find some sort of middle ground with a Republican from Texas, who's cute,
we can do it.
He's cute, but, you know, in, you know, fundamental disagreement in terms of values, then you and I can do it, because totally. You're awesome.
You're
and
awesome.
You're cute too.
Oh, thanks. But so no, it was, and that was where we got to with all of those rosés, right? You know, was like, yeah. Hold on.
Yeah.
We don't agree with the other person's beliefs, but we can get through a conversation without hating each other at the totally. End of it. We totally. Should do something with this. So, totally. Yeah, I think it's kind of fitting, actually, that we're finishing tonight's podcast, or today's podcast, however, whatever time of day you're listening to it, with this conversation. Being 10 episodes in, we've decided to put a little bow on season one of Woo-hoo! TLDR. Woohoo! And take a little break and survive these lockdowns. Also take a little bit of a look back at what's worked in season one, the things that we've loved, the things that we might be able to refine. We'd love to hear from you if there have been particular things that you've learned, or particular episodes that were more helpful, or, you know, felt more awesome to listen to. We want it all, because, we're going to take a little bit of a break and a little bit of a re-huddle on the with the TLDR team. And Annabelle, I'm just so chuffed that you decided to do this with me. I'm so chuffed to be at season 10 and calling, you know, a hiatus for season one.
Are you kidding me? I'm so chuffed that you asked me.
Oh, it's so cute. So it's been
an absolute pleasure.
Oh, I miss you too. Remember the old days where we recorded in person together at the Bear and Bride office? Those were the days. Look, as always, dear listeners, your ratings and your reviews, they go a long way. So if you've enjoyed season one, please jump onto the platform where you get your podcasts and let us know. Keep an eye on our Instagram. Annabelle, what's the handle?
TLDR_Ozpol.
Woohoo!
Did I get it finally?
You got it, girl.
10 episodes, I got it finally.
You got it. And of course, you can send us an email anytime at tldr.ozpol@gmail.com. But from the little TLDR team, Abby, myself, and show boss Amanda, it's been such a pleasure. Season one's been awesome, and we can't wait to see you for season two coming to you real soon.
Bye.
Bye.